right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the KE Report Weekend Show. Now shifting our focus pretty much exclusively to the metals sector as we're chatting with Joe Mazumdar. Joe is the editor of Exploration Insights. Very valuable newsletter for all of you looking to invest in individual resource companies, not just precious metals. As you're going to hear, we're going to be talking a fair bit about copper plays in this segment. We will also get to a recap of some of the major miner earnings out there, especially in the gold space, as this was a busy week for a lot of earnings reports for this sector. Joe, welcome back to the show. I know you just got back from a long trip in Africa, visiting a handful of different projects. Take us through your trip here. What did you go see? What were your takeaways of Africa and the investing nature over there?
Right. Thanks, guys. Yeah, it was one of the longer, well, not longer, but it was, you know, getting into 2 weeks because Africa is far. It's like a 9-hour flight to Europe, but then it's like an 11-hour flight from Germany down to Cape Town, where I went to one mining and also Indaba, a big conference in Africa. My first trip down there to that conference is 2 years ago. So I went back this year. And a few of the themes there were about what was happening. And I wrote a piece in The Assay, which is out there on social media and that, about West Africa investability. And that was a topic of interest there. And then also another issue is infrastructure, especially for the more bulk commodities like copper in the south, in the Central African Copper Belt, in other parts of Southern Africa, which tied into my site visits down there.
Well, Joe, let's maybe kick it off with the West Africa gold side of things. When you think about West Africa, there's a lot of different countries. Some are investable, some may not be with the political strife. You think about good jurisdictions like Sierra Leone, Cote d'Ivoire. You've got Ghana as a big producing country. But then there's other countries like Mali and Burkina Faso that have had their challenges. How do you look at investing in gold producers or developers in West Africa?
So the attraction of West Africa is endowment, and it's certainly got that, greenstone belts, and also the permittability, the social license to operate, and all that sequencing can be much quicker than other jurisdictions, getting into production once you find something. So that's obviously an attraction. And, you know, metallurgically, most of them are pretty well benign, and there's almost a cut and paste way of building these projects and putting them into production, knowing you don't have much infrastructure. It's usually diesel or heavy fuel oil power generations and mostly gold. And so there's a kind of, I don't know, comfort level in terms of the kind of project you're going to see, the endowment, the buildability of it. But then now we've layered on the security risks and creeping nationalism of countries that you just mentioned, like Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger. And if you look at gold production, let's say 2023, the biggest gold producer, like I think you mentioned, was Ghana, which when I was with Newmont in the 2000s, we would call that Africa Light, an easy place to work, no big problems. Some of the same infrastructure issues as everybody else, but much more advanced. And then the next biggest producers of gold were Mali and Burkina Faso. So combined, they produce almost as much as Ghana. But now they're becoming problematic in terms of investing in those countries, because now they're run by military juntas, civilian like leadership. Probably they keep deferring it, as these kind of groups do. And it's all been driven by security risks. So you have Islamic terrorism that's coming from the north, the Sahara, down through the Sahel region into their countries. They're trying to repel them, you know, using their own means. And then the French, that hasn't worked out, led to the, you know, the ingression of the military juntas to lead the security fight. But that's becoming more expensive. They're also using some Russian mercenaries like your Wagner group. And the cost of all of this is, you know, basically generating the creeping nationalism of higher rents with higher free carries up to 35% potentially in Mali, and higher royalties over 10% proposed in Mali under the new mining code. And we've seen what's with the detention of the Resolute Mining CEO, an arrest warrant for CEO of Barrick, negotiations where you basically have to pay these guys off to get your stuff into production, which has happened with Allied Gold. Barrick has paid off. Resolute Mining in the end have paid off. Barrick's one of the only holdouts right now. So yeah, in terms of exploration, you can see the direct impact on exploration on Mali and Burkina Faso, as right now, from their 2012 peak of exploration in these countries, they're at about 20% of that peak. And I can't see it getting better in terms of people going there to explore, knowing that the economics are harder with the higher free carry and the royalties, as well as the security risks of operating that mean that you've got higher costs as well. So yeah, definitely that's an issue in certain parts of West Africa.
Joe, what are some of the good parts of West Africa then? Are there any area plays to be had? Are there any companies that you think are truly just standing out and are still investable?
Okay, so if we break that down, like recently, we saw, the Enchi, which was a new core, they raised, I believe, about 15 million for their project in Ghana. So people are interested, again, endowment, ability to build, blah, 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 in West Africa. And so that money's going to an advanced explorer in Ghana.
That is already PEA stage two, right? So that is advanced stage.
And so then you have Montage Gold feasibility stage building their project in Côte d'Ivoire. That was funded by private equity, streaming, and also the Lundin Group and Zijin came in. And also the Lundin Group and Zijin came in on that project of Bankan in predictive discovery in Guinea. So I'd say like Ghana's always been good, but I think more people are coming back to Ghana, knowing that these other areas are getting more problematic. In Côte d'Ivoire, Guinea, maybe Senegal and those sort of places, people are willing to go because of all those factors that I talked about before. But also what's happening potentially is people are taking that money and going to another geologically similar area, but in a different part of the world, which would probably be the Guyana Shield. So some of that money that's interested in those kinds of deposits and greenstone belts are moving towards Guyana. And so there's much more interest in Guyana, in Suriname, and places like that now.
Yeah, Joe, we've heard a lot of those presentations, seen a lot of slide decks where they're making the point that at one point those land masses were combined when they were Pangaea and then they've separated, but the greenstone belts kind of continue into South America. So interesting. Well, Africa is a big continent. As we were talking about, it's just a huge place. You were just there in the central area and southern area looking at copper projects. What can you tell us about boots on the ground observations as far as the copper belts in Africa?
So I was in my first visit before Indaba, and that was to Namibia to check out the Habe deposit that's now been rebranded under Corex Copper, and is being run by the same people that sold Osino, and then also Otjikoto. So Osino is Twin Hills that went to a Chinese state-owned enterprise called Yintai, which was closed the latter part of last year. And then Heydon was also the guy who was behind the sale of Otjikoto to B2 Gold. So he's from Namibia. He lives in Cape Town. And so he understands the country. And so they've gone into the Habe deposit, which is a big, low-grade, open-pit, amenable copper deposit. One of the oldest copper, porphyry coppers probably in the world. And they're trying to advance. That project's been around for quite a long time. It's been explored by Rio Tinto and Teck, and these guys are trying to advance it. The biggest issue for them, it is a low grade. They're trying to build up the grade by including the credits like moly into the resource. But also their big issues are infrastructure. So, to have such a big mine that you would have to mill it, you need a lot of power. And Namibia was a net importer of power. And so power becomes their big crux, as well as water, the amount of water they need, because we're talking about almost not quite the Namib Desert, but very dry conditions. Rivers close by, but how much water can you take? That sort of thing. Those will be issues that they will deal with. And so it's very infrastructurally related, given the grade, but also the infrastructure in that part of Namibia. But jurisdictionally, it's pretty good. I mean, you could drive there. You don't have security issues and stuff like that. So Namibia is definitely jurisdictionally an excellent place. Infrastructure, it's not easy. That's the issue. And then that you could take over into other parts of Africa, like the Central African Copper Belt, where, Zambia, the roads are much better than I remember. And also, built mostly by Chinese, big Chinese presence. You walk around the streets there, there's Chinese doctors just basically with signs in Chinese. It almost looks like West Vancouver. But then you have a juxtaposition of Western countries active there. You got First Quantum, Rio Tinto's active, Anglo American. So a lot of activity there. The Indians with Vedanta, and they're also putting more money into it. So Barrick is expanding Lumwana, Konkola. The Indians are looking to restart that. First Quantum, over the last year, they've been expanding that after they lost Panama. That's basically their biggest growth. So Zambia is very much on everybody's radar because the DRC, although it's very prospective, the problem is that a lot of Western companies won't go there. So the DRC is more a place that the Chinese will go into, but the West won't. And if you take that Central African Copper Belt, it goes to the northwest and then it makes an arc and comes back to the southwest. That's going into Western Zambia under the Kalahari Sands and then into Angola. And some of that actually comes back into the northern part of Namibia. So that's a part that people are looking at as well.
So does that Chinese presence there, maybe the growth of Chinese companies moving in and developing projects there, does it shy you away from investing in some of these areas or in the country broadly?
No, for me, it brings another player in. As long as I have both people playing, both the East and the West playing, that means there's more potential suitors for the asset. If it's only the Chinese, that could be problematic. And if it's only the West, that could be problematic as well. So you need a combination. You need a combination. And those places that allow both are the ones that interest me the most, because then we have more players. And so the DRC is very interesting, but that would be probably more likely a Chinese-only bid, whereas Zambia, Namibia, you could have bids from both sides. And then also, then I have to look at the issue of Canadian listed company. So if I want to attract the Chinese bid in terms of an investment or something like that, I have to be open to it. That's got to be possible. And so what Solaris did might be what a lot of these companies need to do in this part of the world where you do have a potential Chinese bid.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if more companies change their listing to other listing and other exchanges to get out of Canada just
Yeah,
for
and
that
then
very
it's
reason.
not just listing. The listing is not the issue from what I'm understanding. It's the redomiciling of the management. That's the big deal. And then also what you need to do when you redomicile is then you have to pay an export tax of some sort. And depending on the size of the company and that could be a significant draw on your treasury. But if you've got a private placement pending with Zijin, like Solaris, it makes sense to do it. But if you don't, then that becomes you're asking people to give you money just to basically be able to redomicile, and you got to sort of explain it to them that then you can open up your access to capital. You're not going to sort of leave out one potential list of suitors.
Well, Joe, just when you think of Africa, a lot of people also think about the PGMs in South Africa, but Zimbabwe was busy, Tanzania put some onerous taxes on some companies, though, and Zimbabwe was a hotspot for a while. Any thoughts on those jurisdictions?
Oh, Zimbabwe hasn't been a hot spot for a long time. It's been a hot spot, but for the wrong reasons. Like I could tell you, like Zimbabwe is sort of like the Venezuela of South America, now that Argentina's much better. Is, when you go and take an Uber in Cape Town, they're mostly Zimbabwe people that have been there for almost 10 years that have moved out of Zimbabwe. So Zimbabwe in the 90s, when I first went there in the early 90s, was a great spot. It's just gone down since. There are some mines there, but it's not a place that, people are, busting the door down to get to. That's definitely not where Zimbabwe is. Tanzania might be a little bit better, I'm not sure, but those aren't two jurisdictions that I'm overly focused on.
All right, Joe, let's talk a little bit about stuff that's been happening in your portfolio, what you've been sharing with your subscribers. You shared with us off mic that it's been copper plays, more copper exploration plays that have been benefiting the portfolio that you have. That, I guess, could be surprising to some people because, look, copper exploration plays have largely been, I think, ignored. What have you been seeing? What's been moving your portfolio?
So it's called Exploration Insight. So we tend to do more exploration development and less big gold companies. So those people that have owned the big gold companies, like your Agnicos and that, would have done very well. And I'm not denying that. And if I held them, I probably would have done very well on them. But that's really not what the letter's about. And so the leverage that I've gotten from the gold part of the portfolio is probably in line with everything else, but not outperforming everything else. So that the beta was provided by those companies, but the alpha was underpinned by companies that were, discovering new things in new jurisdictions. Like I'll give you one example was in Kazakhstan with Aris Minerals. I went there last September. I added that to the portfolio. That company's been drilling. They've been coming up with some good results. And so that has been one of the big outperformers this year in the portfolio. And then with, let's say, with Inflection Resources that's going undercover in the Macquarie Belt in New South Wales, they drilled a hole. It's low grade, it's not economic, but it suggests that these are like blind holes going 300, sometimes 400 meters undercover before they hit the bedrock. That managed to hit something that looks very similar to what people are mining down the road at Cadia. So that was huge. So it was these grassroots plays where nobody's redrilling a hole here. This is totally opening up a different area in places that make sense to develop. Like New South Wales, you've got some big mine underground mines there, and in Kazakhstan, there's some really big open pits there. Power is very inexpensive there. Infrastructure is pretty good, and the government is very open about foreign direct investment. So those are definitely those. So jurisdictionally, I'm very aware of where I want to be. And copper, more so than gold, requires a lot more infrastructure. And so that's one thing I do key in on.
Well, Joe, when we talk to a lot of people about copper, they tend to focus in some other jurisdictions, like for the Canadian side, British Columbia, in the US, in Arizona, and then in South America, a lot still in Peru. Do you like any of those jurisdictions or any companies operating in those areas?
Absolutely. So I don't have anything in British Columbia, but I did sit in on A-Mark's discovery at their Aurora prospect there. And that was a great one. But that's the kind of grades you require for where they are because it is remote. So, what I'd be watching as well to see what like Centerra does with Kemess North, because that's similar sort of grades, but that hasn't been put into production yet. Or p restarted yet. So that's the thing I would watch as well. I would also look at, like, in terms of Peru, I do have an exploration play down there, which is also doing grassroots exploration. That one has been doing very well, even though they've taken a long time to get a drill permit, which they just got. That would be Hannon Metals on the eastern side of the Andes in a place that's not very well explored, looking for alkali copper gold porphyries. So yes, I am in Peru. And then in Arizona, we have Arizona Sonora. And I mean, that one has gone up this year, partly because with the Trump administration pushing for domestic production of minerals, this one would fit right into that thematic, producing copper cathode. And then also they've got the investment, by Hudbay Minerals, which is also developing a project Copper World down in Arizona. So yeah, yes, I'm still big in Arizona and then in Peru as well. So yeah, it's definitely multi-jurisdictional that I'm approaching the copper exploration and development theme.
All right, Joe, let's take a step to another area of the gold space and recap a lot of these earnings out of majors, mostly from this week. We continue to hear pretty much record revenues across the board. Sometimes, a lot of the time, record earnings, free cash flow also at very high level. Production seems to be mostly in line with expectation and guidance. Newmont actually had much higher production, but then this year is guiding for a decrease in production. Barrick responded positively to their earnings. Newmont, bit of a mixed bag there. IAMGOLD, unfortunately, not responding very well to their earnings. It's been, again, kind of a mixed bag for earnings, but under that whole theme of record revenues, record cash flow, building up balance sheets. Joe, what's your takeaway from the earnings we've seen from the major gold companies so far?
So I haven't got into and dug into everybody so far, but I did wake up really early to listen to AngloGold Ashanti's, and I'm very impressed by their free cash flow generation. So in 2023, in terms of free cash flow, this multi-billion-dollar company generated about only $109 million in free cash flow in 2023, and now they made about $942 million, so about 9.5 times more free cash flow, or 9 times more free cash flow than they did the year before. So significant leverage. And if you look at the impact on free cash flow, it was mostly the gold price. I mean, their production was flat, which I think is probably a common theme for most of these producers. They're just basically leveraging off the gold price. And what they were saying is that in 2023, their inflation or cost inflation on average was about 8.4%. Okay. And usually we're looking at a CPI of 2.5 to 3. But in 2024, it was moderating down to 6.6. So they're still being impacted by cost escalation. But last year proved that, their margins expanded because the gold price went up at a faster rate than their costs.
Well, Joe, just from a market reaction standpoint, when I was watching the earnings come out for Agnico and Kinross, they both had a sell down afterwards. Now, Newmont and Barrick were already in the hurt locker a little bit, so they popped a little bit. Now they have sold off a little bit more since then. But some of the other companies haven't had the response people would have thought after all these record revenues and earnings and everything. Is there something that investors were hoping for or that analysts were hoping for that they're not seeing? Why are we not seeing more strength when we're at all-time highs in gold prices and the companies, maybe they're not perfect, but they're doing well. They're doing a lot better than they were a decade or two ago. So what is holding these companies back, I guess?
Well, I mean, I used to get this question a lot when I worked for Phelps Dodge at Newmont. When they would put out their earnings, they would go, "Well, why is our share price down?" And it's those little statements you make about the future that everybody keys in on, because your earnings in that is talking about what had happened. And so that's mostly people upgrading their models in terms of their what they had estimated and forecast versus what it ended up being. And most of them came in line, I would say. Some of them exceeded, but not by much. So most of the analyst targets, I would suspect, were there were not a lot of big increases in target price post the release of the earnings. But then the expectations going forward would change their long term. And once, some people go, yeah, we have pretty good production this year, but next year we're not going to produce as much. Oh, we're going to start building this project and the costs have gone up on that. So those statements are what goes into your analyst model going forward. And that could be negative. Because if what you did was already embedded in the market, you're not going to get much, of a boost from that because they already expected that number. The problem is that when you start talking about the future and then it doesn't look as good as people think it should, that's why your share price might go down.
Yeah, all about that guidance. But Joe, make sense of this for me. Look, we all understand gold prices keep on moving higher. That moves the top line and even the bottom line for these companies. But look, they're not out there acquiring a bunch of assets. Yes, they're building some of their assets, which continue to cost more and more. But they're not also returning money to investors. Look, investors either want growth or they want income. It seems like these gold companies, the gold price is giving them growth, but from a company standpoint, these guys aren't delivering on growth from a production level or the income to investor level.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there, but let's start with the big companies. So the big companies, the bigger they get, the harder or probably impossible it is to grow. And Newmont's proved that. And all they're about is generating free cash flow now and sustaining dividends, potentially, and attracting a different investor class. But the problem is that most of these gold companies, their dividend policy is so unstable that it's harder for the investor that's looking outside that invests in a lot of things just for dividend yield and trying to translate, okay, here's this gold company. And then you're looking at their dividend policy versus these other guys and going, well, these guys, their dividend policy has been the same for 10 years. These guys change it, every year. That's probably not a good fit for me. What they are attracting is the investors that are potentially looking for gold exposure and thinking, well, I'll buy a gold equity ETF like the GDX or the GDXJ. But hey, Newmont offers dividends and now it's big, it's liquid, it's diversified, and then it offers a dividend. So this is the one I should invest in over the GDX. But they're not probably getting those generalists that they're trying to get because they're dividend policy is probably a lot more volatile than other people's. So that's a problem for them. They cannot grow anymore. And all they can do is run to standstill. If we go specifically on companies, Agnico has done a great job because jurisdictionally they've managed their portfolio really well. And they have this tendency that the market loves is that they meet guidance. And they do exactly what they say that they're going to do. And so if you consistently do that, you get a premium. If you don't do it, you get discounted for several quarters. And this happened when I was with Newmont. You'll get discount for 3 or 4 quarters in advance just because they won't believe anything you say until you give them 3 or 4 quarters of meeting your guidance. So, and then with Barrick, another big company, they're your comment being in the Hurt Locker is jurisdictionally they're in places that people don't want to be. And before that was you were able to like not talk about it and still make money like when it was Randgold. But now when you have problems in Mali and your big investments right now are basically in Pakistan with Reko Diq and then also now Zambia with the Lumwana expansion. So not everybody might be happy with that. And jurisdictionally, that risk is something people are embedding in your company. I would say, in terms of growth, it's in the intermediates. They wouldn't be interested in a strong dividend policy because they're probably more interested in acquiring the next project. The M&A has been hindered by the overhang of the Newmont divestitures, which they divested almost like, was it $3.8, $3.9 billion worth of. A lot of them producing assets, and people were waiting for that. Most of that is done. And so I should think that those guys willing to grow that didn't make it into the Newmont sweepstakes will be now looking at the next level. of single asset producer, single asset developer, that sort of thing, that makes sense for those guys. So I think most of the growth would, and the M&A at this stage will probably be in the intermediate and those guys that want to grow.
Makes sense. Those are the stocks that broadly have been outperforming the market too. They can grow and they're also benefiting from this higher gold price. So, very good comments there, Joe. It's always a pleasure having you on the show. Again, Joe Mazumdar, he is the editor of Exploration Insights. I'll post a link in the weekend show notes so all of you can learn more about Joe's letter. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Please be sure to go back to our website, kereport.com. Check out our podcast on your podcast player by searching The KE Report and visit our YouTube channel under The KE Report to keep up to date with all our daily editorials and the full weekend show. Joe, thanks again for your time. Everyone, thanks for tuning in. I hope you all have a great weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.